Hi everyone, and welcome to Ask the Horse Live. I'm your host, Haley Pepper, Digital Managing Editor at thehorse.com. As horses age, managing their soundness using a multimodal approach becomes increasingly important. Experts emphasize proactive joint care, appropriate exercise, and routine veterinary evaluations. Regular low-impact work helps maintain joint mobility and muscle support while avoiding long periods of confinement, which can worsen stiffness. Strategic hoof balance, body condition management, and early intervention for mild lameness are key. With thoughtful management and early attention to subtle changes, many senior horses can remain comfortable and active for years. This event is sponsored by American Regent Animal Health. To answer your questions, we are joined by expert panelists, Dr. Lauren Traeger from the Virginia Maryland College of Veterinary Medicine, and Dr. Helen Mansfield from American Regent. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Haley.
Hi, good evening.
Dr. Traeger, can you start by telling us a little bit about your background?
Sure, and thank you so much for having me. Been looking forward to doing this. So a little about me, I've been a lifelong lover of horses. I grew up in Pony Club and with Area 2 eventing. And so, you know, going to vet school to be an equine vet just seemed like the logical next step for me. So, you know, I love working with performance horses, both young and old. I really love the challenge of working on complex performance issues, whether they're related to lameness or not. I mean, lots of reasons why a horse could be performing poorly, not necessarily orthopedic. So I really love that kind of like puzzle challenge. So I also love anything to do with imaging, particularly ultrasound. I briefly thought about becoming a radiologist, but thought I'd miss the patients too much. So currently I'm on faculty at the Virginia Maryland College of Veterinary Medicine. I'm boarded through the American College of Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehab. So my focus is on sports medicine and keeping our horses performing at their best. At, you know, in the university, I'm always with students, both in the classroom and on clinics. I really enjoy teaching students in addition to seeing patients. And then, you know, my husband and I, we have two little girls. We have a small farm in Blacksburg, and I love being able to have my horses in my backyard. Very fortunate. And, you know, we have a couple of horses who are in their 20s who are still working and doing their jobs, albeit at a slightly lower level. So this topic really resonates with me. Keeping them sound and healthy can be a bit of a challenge, but it's very rewarding.
Awesome, thank you. And Dr. Mansfield, can you tell us a little bit about your background and your role with American Regent?
Absolutely, and thanks for having me here tonight. So I was born and raised in Charleston, South Carolina, where I was also involved in my local pony club. I competed in hunter jumper and eventing and was kind of that all-around horse crazy kid. At 14 years old, I got to watch my horse's colic surgery, and from that moment on, that's when I decided I was going to be an equine vet. From there, I went on to University of Georgia for my undergraduate degree and Tuskegee for vet school. After vet school, I did two internships, one in general equine medicine and surgery, and then one in advanced reproduction. I spent almost 15 years in equine private practice working on pretty much every type of horse, from your backyard pleasure horse to Amish workhorses to Olympic level show jumpers. I even spent a couple of months in Germany working on sport horses. Along all those travels, I also became certified in acupuncture and veterinary medical manipulation or chiropractic. Now I'm the senior manager of the professional services vets at American Regent Animal Health, and I've been here about 2.5 years. And in my job, I now provide education for veterinarians and horse owners nationwide. I work on educational programs as well as a bunch of other modes of educating horse owners, practitioners, and students / future practitioners.
Thank you. Before I begin answering questions, I want to remind everyone of our Ask the Horse Live format. We're starting with questions submitted during registration. If you're listening live and would like to submit a question, please do so via the chat window. We'll do our best to get to as many of your questions as possible. If you're listening to the podcast recording of this event and would like to join us live in the future, please visit thehorse.com/askthehorselive to register for notifications. And with that, we're going to jump in. So our first question is for you, Dr. Traeger, and it's from Robert in Rhode Island, who wants to know if you can explain the most common causes of lameness you see in aging horses.
Yeah, so this is a great question. And you know, while every horse is different, there are a couple of things that come to mind with this. The first is osteoarthritis, really, of any joint. Osteoarthritis is a degenerative condition. So as the horse ages, it has the tendency to get more complicated, to get worse for them. And so really any joint is at risk. With older horses, though, in particular, there's the cervical facets kind of come to mind. So osteoarthritis of the neck, which can often result in neck stiffness or neck pain, sometimes actually translate into forelimb lameness, depending on where the pathology is. We see a lot of muscle wasting due to kind of disuse of the neck in conjunction with that, and sometimes even neurologic signs in conjunction, depending on what part of the neck is affected and you know, the disease process. So certainly osteoarthritis of the neck and of any joint comes to mind. Another thing that comes to mind is DSLD, which is degenerative suspensory ligament desmitis. It's a condition of the suspensory ligament, particularly of the branches of the suspensory ligament. And while you can have DSLD, unfortunately, in younger horses, it really kind of resonates with me as like an older horse as they age kind of issue. And the issue with that is that, you know, the suspensory ligament is critical for keeping the fetlock suspended. And so with this disease, the suspensory ligament can kind of lose its elasticity and the fetlock can drop to the ground or hyperextend to the ground. And that is very painful for the horse. It can cause changes to their conformation behind, hoof issues in conjunction with that. So it unfortunately is a disease that, you know, we hope we never see, but unfortunately see quite often. And then another thing too is, you know, as horses change, their conformation can change as well, particularly the conformation of the back. Some horses will get quite lordotic in their spine, which is like a sway back type appearance. And that can really impact the joints in the back, the muscles of the back, so particularly the epaxial muscles, as well as their core strength. And so, you know, loss of epaxial muscles or loss of core strength secondary to back pain, whether it's due to conformation or due to pathology in the joints or soft tissues of the back, can certainly be a big issue for horses as they age. Can have implications for tack fitting appropriately, you know, for their ability to do their job. So fortunately, there's lots of things we can do to help keep the back in good working order. So I think those are really kind of the top three. I mean, there's other things too, soft tissue injuries, particularly those that arise from chronic wear and tear, and not necessarily a cause of lameness, but other causes of poor performance in aging horses, like development of cardiac murmurs or arrhythmias or changes in vision or susceptibility to asthma. Those kinds of things can all impact performance. But yeah, I think that's probably the things that come to mind for me.
Awesome, thank you. Dr. Mansfield, Michaela in California wants to know when a horse is considered aging and why.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when it comes to aging, one of the most common questions we get asked is like, what age is my horse a senior? And I think that kind of really depends on the horse. Horses, just like people, they age differently, and there's no really hard, fast rule about when a horse is officially a senior. You know, some horses may exhibit visible signs of aging or loss of performance earlier than others, which can be affected by, you know, their previous job, genetics, or heck, a bunch of even environmental factors. But there's really no set age where a horse is considered to be a senior. There was actually a survey back in 2023 from horse owners, And most indicated to have first considered their horse old at the age of either 20 or 25 years old. You know, horses are living a lot longer now than they used to be because of all the advances in medicine we have now to keep them happier, healthier, and more sound. And interestingly, actually, in that study, the top three reasons that they consider their horses old were reduced ability to work or exercise. Then they started to show signs of age-related disease or disorder. And then the third one was an increase in gray hair. But, you know, like I said, it depends on how your horse acts, depends on how they behave, depends on how they perform. So there's not really a set age for a senior horse.
Dr. Traeger, Kristen in Washington asked what the best type, frequency, and duration of exercise is for senior horses.
Yeah, so I would say, honestly, just keep them moving as much as possible. I love turnout for aging horses. And, you know, it certainly depends on how comfortable your horse is and if they have any confounding issues, lameness or otherwise, or, you know, some horses as they age due to other metabolic issues can't be turned out on pasture, for example. So certainly depends on the horse, but, you know, getting them out and moving as much as possible is really beneficial for them. And you may have to modify, you know, the turnout conditions as your horse ages. For example, if they've typically been turned out on pasture that's very hilly and that's not quite what they need anymore, or that's a lot of stress on their joints, for example, then, you know, modifying that to a smaller, flatter area that they can maneuver a little bit more easily might be the best option for them. But, you know, horses as natural grazers, they're going to move around constantly throughout the day. In the winter, you can kind of encourage them to move around by sort of spreading out their hay, or, you know, having them walk from their hay to their water and not just have it right next to each other, that kind of thing. So you can get kind of creative with how to keep them moving. Certainly, like, the degree of work ultimately is going to depend on the comfort of your horse as well. But I would say that the best type and frequency and duration of exercise for senior horses is consistent work, low intensity, and then modifying that intensity level, you know, related specifically to the animal and what they can handle. Duration certainly variable depending on the horse as well, but you'd be surprised how fit a horse will stay just with walking. And so walking over varying terrain can challenge them. You know, they don't necessarily need to go out and do trot sets or sprint or anything like that. Just keeping them moving and you know, keeping it consistent is the big thing. For some horses, as they age, if they're having a hard time carrying a rider, they're having issues in their back, for example, that preclude them from carrying a rider, there's a lot you can do with groundwork. You can consider ponying them off of another horse. You know, really just like anything you can do to keep them moving, I think keeps them, like Dr. Mansfield was saying, living a lot longer than maybe they used to.
I completely agree with you, Dr. Traeger. I'm a firm believer that motion is lotion for the joint.
Yeah.
Dr. Mansfield, Nancy in Arizona wants to know what physical and behavioral changes she might see in her horse as his osteoarthritis progresses.
That's a great question, Nancy. Horses can often show subtle clinical and behavioral signs as that OA progresses. Things like stiffness at the start of a ride. Your horse may feel stiff or a little sticky in his movement during warm-up, but then they sort of loosen up as you go. Now, some stiffness can be totally normal, but if you have consistent or worsening stiffness, that can be kind of a red flag that your OA may be progressing. They also can have like a shortened or uneven stride because of joint issues, and because that can affect their ability to like fully extend their joints. So if you notice like shortened, choppy strides, or they feel uneven at any time, that could also signal some joint discomfort. Now, sometimes you're not going to see obvious limping, but something may just feel kind of off to you. Now, we all know our horses, and a slight head bob or dragging a toe or just that feeling he's got a little hitch in his giddy up, it may be a little more noticeable to you because you're keyed into your horse's movement a little more. You know, I always tell people, trust your instincts, because those subtle signs are often some of the first clues we actually see. Now, behaviorally, they can have some reluctance to move forward or turn or perform even just everyday tasks. You know, if they resist forward movement, you know, or balking at some of your transitions or struggling through turns, especially if it's on one side, you know, OA can be causing joint pain and reducing some of the range of motion. Some of the other signs of discomfort or irritability can be, you know, pinned ears, tail swishing, or resistance when asked to work. You know, I had a client who, you know, she knew her mare well enough that she started putting her leg on and that mare started pinning her ears. She knew it was time to get her checked out. You know, these behavioral changes, especially if new or increasing, may point to some pain. Because if your horse is like Mr. Steady Eddie and is suddenly crow hopping around, you know, the arena, that's definitely a red flag to look for pain. But I always told my clients, you know your horse best, listen to them. And if you notice they're feeling off or reluctant to work or giving you some weird new behavior you've never seen before, call your vet. Because early detection by you and your vet is really critical to managing these symptoms and implementing that early treatment, because the earlier we treat any pain in these horses, the better the outcome is going to be.
Dr. Traeger, John in Canada wants to know the best way to bring an aged horse back into work after some time off.
Yeah, so I think that this might depend on, you know, what that time off was for. So that might kind of modify the answer to this question a little bit. But, you know, if this horse, like, let's say, for example, this horse just had the winter off and, you know, it was a bad winter and just was not really doing much, but, you know, spring has arrived and we're ready to start getting back into work, I might approach that a little differently versus if it's a horse that had a significant period of time off due to an injury. You know, those carry certain implications with them separately. But I would say that probably the first thing is to just make sure all systems are go, right? So, you know, having your horse evaluated by your vet to make sure that heart, lungs, everything sounds good. The horse's baseline sound, everything checks out to say that horse is ready to start back into work. That would be an excellent first step. I'd also check your tack and make sure, depending on how much time the horse had off, you know, a lot of things can change about their back, even about their mouth too. You'd be surprised how many performance issues in older horses stem from the mouth. Like, it was kind of wild to me to see, you know, causes of performance issues that all boil down to the mouth. But having those checked out and making sure that, you know, your tack is still fitting appropriately, kind of setting yourself up for success for getting back into work. And then really, you know, I think about it as like preparing yourself to go train for a marathon after you've had a significant amount of time off, right? So long, consistent fitness work is, I think, really the safest way to bring a horse back into work after a variable amount of time off. So lots and lots of walking, and that might mean like a month of just walking, or a couple weeks of walking, or a couple months of walking, right? It just kind of depends on the fitness status of your horse. And then as they get fitter, adding in trot and or canter work, if that, you know, is what your goal is, in intervals. So I'll often say, like, set your watch to beep on every 30 seconds, and every 30 seconds you change from trot to walk, right? Or trot the long side of your arena, walk the short side, or that kind of thing. Interval work really builds up fitness, and that's important because horses that aren't fit will fatigue and they're more likely to injure themselves. Signs of fatigue that you might witness or see as you're bringing the horse back into the work are things like tripping, you know, paying close attention to the recovery rates both during and after exercise. So, you know, is my horse breathing particularly hard while we're working and it's a pretty cool day and that doesn't quite make sense? Or, you know, do they take a long time to recover post-work? Do they need to, you know, cool down for a long period of time? That could signal that maybe they're not quite fit enough for the level of work that they're doing currently, and just take a step back and go back to focusing on more walk, really. And then, you know, a lot of the work that we or the progress that we make in the saddle can also be started just on the ground. And so, you know, horses, we're very kind of proactive about conditioning their core, conditioning their back, conditioning their pelvis, because those are the major stabilizing muscles that are going to help help with their fitness, but also help keep them safe for riding. And so we have mobilization exercises, carrot stretches, you know, your pelvic tucks, your sternal lifts, those kinds of things you can be doing on the ground as you're grooming or tacking up. And that we actually have the evidence-based research to support that it does increase the muscle mass of the epaxial muscles in the back, and those are very important. So, you know, utilizing a combination of groundwork and then lots of long fitness work and making sure that your horse is ready to go before you start any of that, I feel like those are kind of the keys for success for bringing them back into work.
Dr. Mansfield, Alex in Georgia wants to know how veterinarians monitor osteoarthritis progression in horses as they age, and how often should they be reevaluated?
So I love this question. I think one of the best ways to monitor the progression of osteoarthritis is regular performance exams, which in my opinion really aren't done enough in the equine space. You know, one of the reasons for these regular exams is early detection of health problems. And the earlier we detect things, we have significantly increased in the likelihood of positive outcomes. The earlier we catch these issues often mean treatments can be less invasive, less costly, and more likely to result in recovery. Because I truly believe in a proactive approach to management of health issues rather than that reactive response to problems, which really could be the difference between some a little minor setback and maybe a serious injury. So for our horses in regular work, whether they're in competitive sports or just recreational riding, you know, these exams can be crucial for maintaining their health and ensuring we get their best performance. And that preventive performance exam can be an all-encompassing evaluation of your horse. You know, it's going to differ from veterinarian to veterinarian from what they're looking at. But the main focus is often that musculoskeletal exam. But it's also a really good opportunity to look at the other important aspects of your horse's health, like checking out their vaccination program, you know, as, you know, checking in their mouth, just like Dr. Traeger just said, you know, reviewing their shoeing and even their diet. When I was performing performance exams, I separated them into a static and dynamic portion. That static exam involved observation, palpation, passive flexion of all the major joints, and that's all done while the horse is standing in place. And then we do that dynamic portion of the exam when I watch the horse move at a walk, trot, and canter, you know, in hand, lunged, you know, even I'd watch them being ridden. And for horses that are in consistent year-round training programs, I would say once to twice a year exams make the most sense, especially as these horses age or they're going into harder training portions of their career.
Yeah, I think you took the words right out of my mouth. I feel like I need a shirt that says be proactive instead of reactive. I mean, you're 100% correct, right? Like getting on top of something before it is a problem, I think is the only way to go. So I'm glad somebody else feels that way too.
Absolutely. Every presentation I give, we talk about proactive versus reactive.
Dr. Traeger, Irina in Alberta wants to know how to keep a high-level performance horse comfortable and competitive even into his later years.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that this is completely doable with taking like a comprehensive whole horse approach. And I mean, I think horses just get better as they age. Like, at this stage in my life, I would much rather take the 18-year-old been there, done that, than like the 4-year-old wild feral thing, right? And so particularly horses that have had a career, I think that they just, I don't know, they kind of like, they kind of lose, I think they kind of lose like a lot of that, what makes them, gives them a personality and kind of what makes them a horse when they're like slated for retirement, right? And so I think that even if you have a high level performance horse and you're taking it, you know, backing down a step or maybe not showing quite as frequently, but like keeping them in a program is, I think, the best way to keep them, you know, happy and healthy, like as they age. And so, you know, kind of what exactly what Dr. Mansfield was saying in the previous question, with these, taking that proactive instead of reactive approach is super important. And so for these older horses, I often see them more frequently throughout the year than I might the younger horses, right? And these are just regular kind of like all systems go wellness checks, right? And so making sure they're staying sound and flexing well, their back and their neck and their pelvis are palpating well. Everything else is looking good. They're not developing any signs of metabolic issues or, you know, because those things are Cushing's in older horses or PPID or equine metabolic syndrome with insulin dysregulation can absolutely wreak havoc on them and really have implications for staying sound as they age. I think that these horses really benefit from, you know, obviously regular farriery, but paying close attention to making sure they're maintaining, you know, matched hoof pastern access and appropriate palmar angle. And so for these older horses, as their conformation kind of higher up changes, often we see those issues or those changes reflected in their feet as well. And so regular podiatry evaluations, including, you know, taking radiographs to assess for balance and making sure everything is looking good, I think is very important. You know, if your horse does have musculoskeletal issues that were previously addressed, you know, do you have kind of a complete picture of what's going on? Do you have an updated picture of what's going on? And is there a plan in place? And so we've got lots and lots of things that we can do to help support horses and their joints and their musculoskeletal system as they age, you know, from like a variety of standpoints. And so, you know, considering those ancillary supports, such as joint supplements, for example, or specific rehabilitation techniques to make sure their core is staying strong, that their back is staying strong, that their proprioception is staying conditioned. You know, all of those things I think can really be valuable to keep a horse performing well into their 20s, you know, and beyond. So.
Dr. Mansfield, Lydia in North Carolina wants to know if there's a point where joint injections are no longer beneficial for a horse. How would she know when the horse has reached that point, and what are some other options?
I would say the joint injections are failing if you see no improvement in lameness within a couple weeks of injections, or that rapid return of the symptoms you had before injection, like 2 months or less. You know, other indicators could be like persistent, unexplained, like bad performance, you know, reluctance to work, stiffness, behavioral changes. You know, sort of quote unquote, the norm for joint injections usually includes steroids and hyaluronic acid. But one of my favorite things about equine medicine is how it's constantly changing and improving, and we're finding other ways to treat these horses. You know, there's some alternatives now to those traditional corticosteroid injections. That could be things like regenerative medicine, intra-articular hydrogels, systemic joint support. You know, some of the regenerative options out there, which I used to use a lot of times when horses were no longer responding to the normal corticosteroid injections, were things like, you know, platelet-rich plasma, autologous protein solution, IRAP, stem cells, alpha-2. And then you've got some of the systemic OA therapies out there, like polysulfate glycosaminoglycan, intravenous sodium hyaluronate, and pentasan polysulfate injection, which all have disease modifying effects, and they actually treat all the synovial joints versus just the specific joints for joint injections. I'm also a strong believer in that whole multimodal approach to OA management. There's never going to be one silver bullet to treat OA. It's often going to take multiple modalities for like that effective long-term management. And, you know, as we've said, there's adjunctive therapies out there too. Acupuncture, chiropractic, massage, laser, PMF, you know, vibration, controlled exercises. You know, we have so many tools in our toolboxes these days. And equine rehabilitation facilities are also an excellent resource to offer, you know, exercise programs and so many other modalities to reach whatever goals you need for your horse.
And if I could just add one other comment to that, I think that it's important to do a little investigation if, you know, like, for example, your horse has gotten its hocks injected on an annual basis for the last X number of years, and they've, you know, he's always felt really good after that, and it seems to have maintained him for 9 to 12 months. You know, if that suddenly stops working, be a little critical of, like, you know, do we have a different problem here, right? And so, you know, for example, a lot of horses that typically respond really well to hock injections and then suddenly stop, I'm a little worried about the health of their proximal suspensories, right? Because, like, those can, you know, the hock and the proximal suspensory pain can emanate from both one or both of those areas and look very similar clinically. But, you know, if the horses stop responding to a hock injection, I'm going to be a little worried about the suspensory and kind of maybe investigate that a little bit more too. So, you know, there are certainly, like, I feel like it's never as black and white as we want to make it, right? There's, like, horses, there are lots of little things that can kind of be smaller problems and then get to the point where, you know, suddenly they're too big to ignore type thing for the horse. And so, you know, if the joint injections have stopped working, you could have a separate problem going on as well.
Dr. Traeger, Cynthia asked if there are any stretching or groundwork exercises that can help prevent or slow the progression of joint disease and keep an aging horse comfortable.
Yeah, so I'm not sure, oh gosh, if there was something we could do to completely prevent joint disease, that would be amazing, right? I think that like whoever can figure that out like wins, right? So, but I will say that stretching and groundwork exercises are fantastic from the standpoint of keeping joints moving in an appropriate range of motion. And so, for example, what I mean by that is, like, if you watch a horse gallop and you kind of freeze frame the second where their one, like, forelimb is in impact phase of stride, and you see that fetlock just hyperextend and disappear down into the ground, right? Like, that is putting that joint through extreme range of motion. And that is not the best thing for the joint, but I mean, it's what we ask our horses to do for a living, right? And so on the other hand, what we can do with stretching and groundwork is take those joints through passive range of motion exercises, which are controlled range of motion exercises that are not going to push the joint kind of past its limit, and is also a great tool for helping you kind of discern whether they're painful on passive range of motion. They shouldn't be painful on passive range of motion, but that, you know, if they're reluctant to do those exercises, that might suggest that, you know, there's a problem brewing. So stretching, you know, mobilizing, like micro motions to mobilize the joints and kind of isolating each joint and doing each joint separately, as well as kind of like manipulating the muscle tendon units that support those joints. Certainly very, very proactive approach. You know, joints are pretty incredible. They have a lot of proprioceptive receptors in the joint capsule that need to be conditioned just like any other part of the body. And so the more we can keep them moving under like appropriate loads, the healthier they'll be and the more willing or the more likely they are to undergo extreme loads, like when we're asking them to work. You know, I always think it's a good idea to do, to consider, you know, what the horse has done or is doing prior to doing passive range of motion exercises or stretching or groundwork exercises, meaning like, you know, joints that are already kind of warmed up, I think go through those rehabilitative exercises a bit better. So warming the horse up could be, for example, just taking them for, you know, a brisk like 5 to 10 minute hand walk, or if you have like a treadmill or something, putting, or a hot walker, putting them in the walker for a few minutes and then performing those exercises, or using some sort of like therapeutic heat source to kind of warm the body up beforehand. I feel like we always get a little bit better quality of exercise after that. And, you know, not everyone has access to this, but aquatic therapy is also excellent for joints. So, you know, an underwater treadmill, I probably would say not necessarily swimming the horse, because that there are a lot of uncontrolled variables with swimming the horse, but underwater treadmill therapy, you can adjust the height of the water and kind of target specific joints, like the fetlock versus the hock, for example. The nice thing about underwater therapy as well is that depending on the height of the water, you can unweight the horse quite a bit. And so, you know, that really, like that buoyancy factor really takes away a lot of the ground reactive forces that occur when the horse, you know, strikes the ground and is walking. And so that can also, you know, be quite beneficial when we're thinking about kind of conditioning joints and bringing the horse back into a program, for example. So yeah, you can get really creative with stretching and groundwork exercises. Anything that makes the horse, like from a groundwork exercise, walking over raised cavalettis or ground poles, backing exercises, even something, you know, as simple as like putting one bell boot on one hind limb, you know, the horse will eventually acclimate to that, but for probably a good 3 to 5 minutes, they're going to be like, kind of like, you know, kind of goose stepping a little bit on that one bell boot hind limb. And so that can kind of help condition, specifically those joints, and also translates well to the large muscle groups in the back and the pelvis too.
You know, I totally agree with, you know, everything you said. I also think it's super important as these horses age that we also need to make sure we're giving them longer warm up and longer cool down points, because I will say I appreciate osteoarthritis more the older I get, as I'm starting to get it as well, because I know when I work out, I need a little longer time to start, and I need a little longer time to cool down these days.
Yes, absolutely.
Dr. Mansfield, Becky in Illinois asks if there are alternatives to NSAIDs for senior horses with joint pain who also have a history of gastric ulcers.
Yeah, so non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, or NSAIDs, are pretty frequently used in the equine world. Actually, they're only secondarily used to dewormers, and we prescribe them for a plethora of reasons, including things like when they're recovering from surgery and lameness issues. You know, these drugs are extremely helpful when we're managing equine pain, but they do have a fairly significant side effect on that equine stomach and GI tract. You know, NSAID-induced injury can occur anywhere in the GI tract, but that right dorsal colon and the gastric mucosa appear to be the most sensitive to our NSAIDs. You know, there was a study, I think it was 2018, where they found some of the COX-2 NSAIDs still cause gastrointestinal damage, even in healthy horses. You know, they studied phenylbutazone and furacoxib, and they both resulted in gastric ulceration. But specifically, though, the horses treated, they had similar degrees of ulceration to that squamous portion of the stomach, but those furacoxib-treated horses had less severe ulceration, and the furacoxib resulted in less inflammation of that gastrointestinal than the phenylbutazone. So, you know, we have drugs that are safer for use for the GI tract, but they can still have effects on the GI tract. But as I've said before, we got a lot of tools in our toolbox where we can help these horses out. Again, we have our systemic osteoarthritis treatments like polysulfate glycosaminoglycan, intravenous hyaluronate sodium, and pentasan polysulfate injection, like I said, that goes to treat all the joints. And if you have a specifically affected joint, you know you're causing pain, joint injections can be super helpful. And those can include steroids, HA, regenerative therapies, or intra-articular hydrals. It all depends on that severity of the disease and what your vet recommends. And then rehabilitation centers can be of great help, which I'm sure Dr. Traeger can speak to better than I can.
Dr. Traeger, Lisa in Wisconsin wants to know if there's any way to prevent navicular disease in horses. How can she and her vet slow its progression in a senior horse?
Oh, Lisa, I feel like we could have a whole hour conversation about this. But it all boils down to keeping the components of the navicular apparatus happy, which it's not just the navicular bone, but it's, you know, the bursa, the deep digital flexor tendon, some of the supporting ligaments, such as the impar ligament, the suspensory ligament of the navicular bone. I mean, we have to basically be like a therapist to all of those components to have all the stars align for navicular pain not to arise in the horse. And I really strongly believe that, like, the number one thing that we can do to help prevent this is to make sure that horse is appropriately trimmed and shod, or appropriately trimmed and as a barefoot horse. And so, you know, the principles of keeping the navicular apparatus happy really boil down to making sure that we are not loading that navicular apparatus unnecessarily. And so keeping the hoof pastern axis in alignment, keeping a positive palmar angle, so we're unloading the deep digital flexor as it passes along the navicular bone. Those are really important. And so, you know, making sure that you have a good relationship with your farrier, that your horse is getting regular trimming and shoeing, and that your vet is also, you know, a part of that conversation too, and contributing, you know, from like a radiographic evaluation standpoint, and making sure that they're maintaining their soundness. And if they are coming up lame, that it's not, you know, localized to the navicular apparatus. There are other things too that we know lead to development or progression of navicular pain that are unrelated to poor foot conformation or trimming and shoeing. And, you know, that is kind of like unreasonable loads on otherwise, you know, appropriate conformation. And so, like, the thing that comes to mind are, you know, kind of the weekend warrior horses, right, who kind of rest all week and then go really hard for a couple of days over the weekend, or horses who are consistently ridden on, you know, footing that is a bit too much impact, right? So, you know, harder footing, or footing that's not as forgiving. Like, those kinds of things can put unreasonable loads on the navicular apparatus in addition to the rest of the horse's body as well. So, you know, giving them like the building blocks for success from that standpoint can really help alleviate that. If your horse does have navicular pain, there's a lot that we can do to help address that. So there's a lot we can do from a shoeing standpoint, whether it's a combination of a special type of shoe or a special type of pad or packing material or something that is going to unload the navicular apparatus. We've got, we actually, like, with you know, with our MRI capabilities, we have the ability to tell exactly what's going on with that navicular bone and its associated soft tissue structures, which really changes the game in terms of getting a complete diagnosis and being able to target, you know, the specific issue that's occurring. So whether that's bone edema within the navicular bone, which can be quite painful, or is it a deep digital flexor tendon issue, which, you know, requires a whole separate host of treatments. So, you know, if your horse has navicular pain, it is not the end of the world. I feel like it used to be, you know, kind of like almost like taboo, like nobody wanted their horse to ever be diagnosed with any navicular pain, but there's really a lot we can do for it now. So I think it's just getting a complete diagnosis and then figuring out, you know, where do we go from there? So.
We've had a few live questions about supplements, so let's talk about those for a few minutes. Dr. Mansfield, Alice in Michigan, says her 19-year-old Arabian is not yet showing any clinical signs of arthritis. Should she start him on a joint supplement anyway?
So it's never too early to institute some sort of care for your horse's joints. And I love that owners that are proactive about their horse's health. You know, there's a survey of owners in the U.S., and 84% of horses reported giving supplements to at least one horse, and joint supplements were the most popular. You know, despite the high use of supplements, there's not a lot of scientific evidence that back there to back those products' claims. And unfortunately, they're not regulated by the FDA, so they're not required to prove safety or efficacy. Also, there have been some independent lab analyses out there that revealed a lot of those products actually fall short of the labeled amounts of their active ingredients they have on the label. Now, navigating equine oral joint supplements can be frustrating and super challenging, and there's a billion different supplements out there. And you can always talk to your vet about the supplements available out there.
I think we might have lost Dr. Mansfield for a minute. So Dr. Traeger, do you want to jump in and talk a little bit about choosing a high quality joint supplement?
Yeah. So I think Dr. Mansfield set the stage perfectly, right? You know, the nutraceuticals are not FDA regulated. It's the same in the human world too. And so you have to kind of look at joint supplements with kind of a critical lens. I think the best thing that you can do to choose a good joint supplement is to look for a product that has evidence-based research behind it. And so that research is readily available to you through the manufacturer's website or through even social media platforms, but it will be there, and it's usually like on the front page, right? Because, you know, these manufacturers have this peer-reviewed research that states that, you know, the ingredient that is in this joint supplement is actually efficacious. It's doing something that will benefit the horse. And, you know, I would be very wary of manufacturer claims, particularly for supplements that, you know, don't have any kind of evidence-based research behind them. And so, you know, components of joint supplements that we have good evidence-based research behind include things like glucosamine, chondroitin sulfate, hyaluronic acid, MSM, ASU. There's kind of a newer one out there that's getting a lot of attention in the joint supplement world called resveratrol. It's kind of the new kid on the block, and there's very promising data coming from that. And so the companies that produce joint supplements with these ingredients in them will often have, you know, evidence-based research to back it, and I personally would feel safer giving my horse, you know, those versus something that, you know, sounds cool, maybe looks cool, but probably doesn't have a lot of research behind it yet. So I would just, and the other thing too is, like, because it's not an FDA regulated controlled thing, your quality control is sometimes a little scary too. And so, you know, I would just have a look at these joint supplements through a critical lens. And if ever in doubt, you know, reach out to your veterinarian, because we get questions about joint supplements all the time. And I can guarantee that your vet will have an opinion and will help you choose something that's best for your horse.
In addition to what Dr. Traeger said, which are excellent points, I always want to make sure that the manufacturer is an established and reputable company. Always make sure there's study results and not just testimonials on their label, like not just people say it's great. Clear instructions on dosing. And another thing to look for, just because now I work for a pharmaceutical company, is if there's a lot number or something that identifies. So if you have a problem and you call into the company, they get that batch. And also a customer service number so you can reach out with questions or concerns on the product.
Sorry, I feel like we could also probably talk about this for the whole hour, right? But the other thing too is, right? You know, if you're competing your horse at a recognized events, there's a long list of ingredients that are prohibited. There are a long list of prohibited substances, some of which can be found in these supplements. And so, you know, just making sure that you're playing ethically and making sure that, you know, your horse is not taking one of these substances is important too. And so again, those reputable companies that Dr. Mansfield was referring to, like they should not steer you wrong, but you know, some of the things we can get off of the shelf elsewhere, you could get burned a little bit by those.
Dr. Traeger, we have a live question that seems like it's up your alley. It's from Cornelia, who wants to know about balance pads and if they can be used to develop muscles in our senior horses. Can you explain this a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I love balance pads. And so balance pads are these kind of rectangular or square pads that are made of different densities of material. So they're either, they can be quite squishy or they can be quite firm. And it's all about like challenging the horse to maintain their center of balance while standing on these pads. And by maintaining their center of balance, like the horse's center of balance is right behind their elbow. And so in order to maintain their center of balance, they really have to engage their core and use core stability to avoid kind of truncal sway and looking like they're kind of like wobbling a little ataxic on the pads. And so they are fantastic tools for helping condition the core and then as well as the back, and kind of just like helping to kind of sort of tune that horse's proprioception and balance. The squishier the pad, the harder it is. So like it's kind of just like, you know, us, if we stand on an unstable surface, you really have to engage your core in order to keep your balance versus a more stable surface. And so, you know, these, you can make it easy for the horse by just putting, you know, one set of limbs or one limb on the pad, or you can make it more challenging by having the horse stand on all four pads at once. And then you can make it even more challenging by asking them to do like carrot stretches while they're standing on the pads, like take their nose to their chest or their nose to their knees or their nose to their fetlocks without letting them step off the pads. And so, you know, that like it is hard work for the horse, and a lot of horses take to it really well. Something you can incorporate, you know, during your grooming routine, or tacking up, or even while the horse is eating. These pads are sold commercially. I've also seen people make their own pads too, from various sort of foam materials as well. And we do have some peer-reviewed research that shows that it just, you know, using these stability pads several times a week for 10 to 15 minutes at a time helps increase the cross-sectional area of the major stabilizing muscles in the back. So specifically the multifidus muscle, which is like the hot rehab muscle that we all love to talk about right now. I'm a huge fan of those pads. And so I think, you know, it's one thing that you can easily incorporate into your horse's routine. Absolutely.
We're coming to the end of our time tonight. So Dr. Mansfield, our last question is for you. It's from Teresa in Wisconsin, who wants to know what it means when a horse is serviceably sound. Are these horses still happy in their work?
Oh, that's a interesting question. So the term serviceably sound, we hear that a lot in practice. You know, it doesn't mean the horses are lame. It means a little something to anyone you ask, honestly. To me, it sort of means the horse can still do the job that's being asked of them without any pain or suffering, you know, even if they have some minor blemishes or chronic conditions or require some routine maintenance. Unlike a quote-unquote perfectly sound horse, a serviceably sound horse may have past injuries or age-related stiffness, but is not lame or in pain during work.
I think, gosh, like serviceably sound, like Dr. Mansfield was saying, can mean, it's hard to quantify. It can mean a lot of different things. Like, to me, the serviceably sound horse is a horse that maybe is not doing quite the level of work or quite the job that maybe they used to, but they're still, they still have some go left at them, right? And so whether that is just doing walking trail rides or toting around like a little kid, being like that great first like up down lesson pony, you know, teaching somebody how to canter for the first time, but needing a little extra help in order to maintain their serviceably soundness status, you know, to me that's kind of what that means. And I think that there are very few horses that are ready for full retirement. I feel like I've seen a lot of horses change in their personality and their demeanor when they just stop doing a job. And so, you know, the serviceably sound horse, maybe they can only do something a couple times a week or a couple times a month. But I think, you know, keeping them moving, keeping them in motion, and then paying close attention to, you know, are there specific parts of their body that need special attention, like their joints, for example, or their muscle mass or that kind of thing. You know, I think that to me is sort of what encompasses like a serviceably sound horse. There are certainly issues that will arise in horses that do kind of defer to full retirement. But I think that, you know, we've talked a lot tonight about all the tools in our toolkit for keeping those horses going long term, and you know, it's a much bigger reality now for us in our horse population.
That's all the time we have for tonight. Thank you, Dr. Traeger and Dr. Mansfield, for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you to American Reject Animal Health for sponsoring this event. And finally, thank you to our audience for listening and sending in these questions. If you're listening to us after the live event as a podcast episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and recommend Ask the Horse Live to a friend. Until next time, from everyone at the Horse, have a great night.